Blog Talk Radio.
If we all toe the line, maybe we'll see another day. If we all
today, it's me hosting. It's Glenn Kennedy. For the next hour and 54 minutes, we're discussing issues about West Papua. And co-hosting me from Sydney, I think, is Soleil. Good morning and welcome, Soleil.
Hi, good morning, Glenn.
Great to be participating in the show again. And particular, Soleil, we'd like to both welcome all the listeners in Papua and PNG who are tuning into the show today as we discuss raising the issue of West Papua. We have the point of this show also is to try and interview five active from around the world, and which includes also highlighting other Indigenous cultures. But this show focuses on the problems and issues facing the people of West Papua. For those people who are tuning in perhaps via Facebook, you can join the conversation from our Free West Papua Movement page, Australia, and leave comments, ask questions. We have two guests on the show today. Well, Soleil might enter them both in a moment. I'll just give you a quick read down for those people who don't know or who know very little about West Papua. West Papua is the western half of the island of New Guinea. It's about approximately 250 kilometres north of Australia. It's our closest neighbour. And the eastern half is free and independent. That's PNG. And the west have been suffering from a slow-motion genocide for well over 3 years at the hands of the Indonesian military regime, who invaded West Papua and took over from the Dutch in the 1960s. And this initiative and other and discussing and launching on the show and the coming weeks is to raise awareness to our listeners through discussions with our colleagues and supporters from Free West Papua from all over the world. And back to you, Soleil. I might get you to, if you could introduce or just give us a bit of background first. I think we've got another song coming up in a piece of music, the WPLO, West Papuan Liberationization March. It's a big band, military band piece, with the help of John Anari from New York. We might play that before we have the guest. But Soleil, could you tell us a little bit about the guests that we'll be talking to on the show today?
Sure. At the moment, we're still trying to connect with Julian from the West to connect with us. Still trying to. But I'll tell you a little bit about Barbara, who's tuned in from. Now, Barbara has been advocating for West Papua and raising awareness about the issue in West Papua, Italy. And
a lot to raise with us. Okay, great. Last week we had on the show Peter Bang from, is that how you pronounce it? Peter Bang or Peter Bang from Copenhagen in Denmark. Peter shared with us some fascinating stories. Sorry, Soleil, yep. Peter shared with us some fascinating stories about his visits to West Papua and photos we've decided in the lead up to the raising of the flag on December 1st, as actions planned for around the world the UK campaign are focusing on their flag raising. We here in Australia have decided to try, with the help of Peter Bung, to highlight some of the health issues. And input, well, there's probably two things, as always, there's two problems. We have the issues of the indigenous Papuans living in the major cities like Jayapura, and we also have the problems, the conditions they face with the military, and goodness knows what's going on in the mountains, the forests and ranges, which have very little access to Western media. As far as I know, there are still very few, if any, Western journalists allowed to go and report or at least obtain easy access to be able to do this. And as far as I know, at this stage, the UN has still not been able, or aid agents still not able to operate in West Papua. Today also we'll be discussing some things that want to hear all about the Kalunga Foundation. They are doing some amazing work with the refugees who have, there's tens of thousands of West Papuan refugees who have fled Indonesian rule and now live in border camps along the Papua New Guinea border. So we'll get to talk to Saleh about that a little bit and her work with the Kalunga Foundation. There was something Peter mentioned last week on the show, and it was a greeting. I remember when, it might have been me, someone said Bua Merdeka, and Peter mentioned another greeting. And do you recall that? Can you refresh my memory, Saleh?
Sorry, can you repeat that, please? I'm just trying to connect. Come again, please.
We were talking, when we were talking on the show last week with Peter, I think Papua Merdeka as a greeting, Free West Papua, came up. And I think Peter mentioned something, I think it was Papua Nila Nila, is it... I can't pronounce it, but can you recall what the greeting was?
The Papua Nilik Ariak.
Yeah. Could you explain to our listeners what that means?
It basically means freedom for West Papua, Free West Papua, the language of the West Papua Isidalani. I know of other dialects, Isidalani, Papua.
Thanks, Saleh. And of course, Papua Merdeka is derived from Sanskrit, I believe, and it's a Malay word. That means prosperous and strong and free. Now, where shall we move? Can we have the West Papua Liberation Army March now, please, Saleh? I might John and Ari. Here we go. Certainly a rousing march. Thank you, John and Ari, for your work at the United Nations in New York on behalf of the people of West Papua. I think many of you would be would know John Inari and know the work he does advocating and working there, trying to raise issues of West Papua at the United Nations. Well done, John. And that's a new piece of music composed and sung on the phone, I believe, by John Inari. And I will move on. Oh, and now Soleil's just mentioned that Julian has just joined the show. So shall we start with Julian, or shall we? Has Barbara been waiting? Barbara Giannazzi is from Italy and runs the West Papua Facebook page over there, and she's been advocating for West Papua for quite a while and has been lobbying her local MPs and politicians. Are we right to go to speak to Barbara?
Sure. Hi, Barbara. Barbara,
hi.
Are you there?
Yes. Hi.
Hello, Barbara. Yeah. Thanks hi. So much for joining us here today.
No problem. You're welcome.
How can I try and say, is it Bella Grazia Bellissimo?
It's perfect. Perfect Italian.
How's my Italian? Well, it's wonderful to be talking to you all the way from Italy. Could we start just by hearing a little bit about you? In particular, how did you first come to hear about the West Papuan cause, and what triggered your passion to join this cause, perhaps, rather than other causes?
I learned about Papua to say truth. And what drives Papua is the fact that they are very connected to each other. There is no disturbing. They want all the same thing. And so they move the same direction. And this, for me, you cannot see in the rest of the world. They are very close together, struggle.
I find the subject of all things West Papua absolutely fascinating. But I know what you mean. I'm a musician, and from a musician's point of view, I'm fascinated with the not only the music, but the artwork too, and the culture. What sort of work are you doing with your advocacy at present?
The last thing that I did is to contact the environment in Italy that is against the palm oil plantation. So I use this to get and to let him know that some more serious problem there in Donin province. And so I mentioned West Papua, some stuff, some information for an answer.
That's wonderful work, Barbara. Just for pull that. A little footnote for people that are listening in, if you would like to write to a politician, the word rather than emailing people, it's best to get a real letter produced somehow and post it to your local MP, whether that's state or, and then also to the federal minister. I believe they don't have an obligation to reply, respond, or act upon a email, but if they receive a written letter in the mail, they have to respond. You may only get a standard response, but in some cases, and I think Barbara's perhaps hit on a good person to write to, and that would be the environmental ministers wherever you are located in the world. Of course, there are many issues facing West Papua. The environment is just one. There's also the, I mentioned a little bit earlier, there's the health. And Peter Bung, who has visited West Papua, he was speaking on our show last week, Barbara, and he mentioned terrible conditions of orphans that are living on the streets in West Papua, and that children are orphans because of they've lost their parents and their clan, their tribe, through the genocide or through disease. And he was also talking about how the spread of AIDS, HIV virus, is becoming, I think there was a quote of 30 out of 100 people affected at random tested positive for HIV. So in the next few weeks here on this show, we're going to, in Australia, that's our tack, to try and raise awareness in particular about the other ways that a genocide can affect an Indigenous population. In years gone by, I remember reading about how, I think here in Australia and in America, horrible, I think it was the armies, sent out infected blankets. I think they were infected with smallpox or something, deliberately gave blankets to the Innes people, Indian Americans, and and here in Australia, and that killed, oh, goodness knows how many people that killed. So disease is lack of health care and refusal to treat people. There's many ways of discriminating against any group, and this is something I think a very worthy subject to try and focus on in these next few weeks leading up to December 1. Don't forget, if you're listening in, you'd like to join the conversation and ask Barbara or Julian any questions, or myself or Soleil, you can. We may have a post up on the Free Papua Move Australia page or the Free Papua Move Victoria page, and you can pop a comment, ask a question, your support, share the show online. Back to you, Soleil. Have you, what would you like to do next? So have you got something you'd like to ask Barbara? Or Barbara, have you got some more you would like to add before we introduce Julian?
No, I the next thing.
You'd like to move to the next thing?
I would just like to add, would like to check Barbara for, and Pure Italy, and he would like to be Barbara, search her on Facebook. Barbara, if you mention of your face, because I can't say it.
Campagna Italiana per la Liberazione della Papua.
That's the page to look for if you want to connect with Barbara Lee and projects or events for West Papua. I think next song, Glenn.
All right, then. And perhaps if you, just another reminder, if you're looking at the Facebook page, we've got a Raising the Issue of West Papua news podcast link there. I think it's at the top of the page on the Free Papua Movement. Maybe we could get Barbara to add the link to her Italy page to the comment of either this one, or if we're going to have a new one for today's show, and then people can see and follow the conversation there on Facebook. What's the next song we're having, Soleil?
I think I'll play called Blood by everyone. We're just waiting for the play, and then
to me, I'm waiting for you.
back already. Hello, am I on? Yes, we're back already. I'm in the middle of making a cup of coffee. Next, or very shortly, we're going to Julian. And Julian's another a kind-hearted person who does wonderful work for advocacy on behalf of the people of West Papua. We played a chant at the start of the show last week and this week, and this is one of the initiatives here in Australia we launched today via the this radio show, and that is a global chant. And the idea is, if you see the post on Facebook, firstly, you can share it with your friends and like the post, like the Free Papua Australia page. And the idea is, listen to the chant. It only goes for about a minute, and there are three lines to be sung. And get a group together, a group of your friends who are supporters of West Papua, or even just people who would like to support a good cause, and sing along with this chant and record it on your mobile phone, either with your voice recorder app, or if you can't figure out how to use that, you can just send a video in and post it on the page. And we will add on a box or clapping your hands, or if you're good enough, really clever, you might even be able to play the guitar or a musical instrument. You may even be able to write some lyrics for a verse or another line for the chant. But please have a listen to the chant. Now, think about who you can ask to join in and record something and send it into freewestpupvictoria@gmail.com. Soleil, I can hear my coffee pot boiling. Would you like to, Julian, and I'll listen in as I quickly make a cup of coffee?
Sure, no worries.
Thank you.
Hi to all listeners out there. I'm just introduced Julian, who has been advocating for West Papua here in Deep for a very long time. And he's going to be talking to us today about the United Nations legal obligation to West Papua and things that we in Australia and the world can be doing West Papua gaining. Hi, Julian, you there?
Good morning, Saleh. Hi, how are you?
Hi, good morning. I'm all right.
I'm fine, thank you.
Yep. So you can just explain to our list about the United Nations obligation. Anything else would be important to know about West Papua's legal status and also what we can do to help West Papua in freedom.
Yeah, certainly. Well, probably most of your listeners know, was originally a Dutch colony back in the last couple of centuries. And were preparing West Papua, or West New Guinea it was called then. They were preparing West New Guinea, which was their obligation under the United Nations Charter. So the 1st of December 1961, West Papua had a New Guinea Council, which was like a de facto government. It had a national anthem, and it had a national flag, the Morning Star flag. So Guinea, or West Papua, was well on the road to independence, just the same as Australia was preparing Papua New Guinea for independence on the other side of the border. However, what's partly as a result of the Cold War in some circles, what has transpired was for the Dutch to transfer that non-governing, non-self-governing territory, coercion for the Dutch to transfer that territory to the United, and then the United to transfer territory to the Republic of Indonesia. Now, the problem with all that is 1960, the United Nations General Assembly approved 1514, and that resolution states quite unequivocally that, just quote it for you, it says quite unequivocally, non-self-governing which have not attained independence to transfer all power to the people of those territories without any conditions. So from 1960 onwards, the Dutch, or whoever, compelled by that resolution, which is an international law, to transfer all power to the people of those territories, non-self-governing territories. So what we believe is that the transfer in 1902, the New York Agreement, was illegal. It's legal to administer a non-self-governing territory. That's in Article 85, I think. But without going into too much legal detail, the United Nations can take possession of a territory and then it can give it independence. But the transfer from the United Nations to another already independent nation, in this case Indonesia, we firmly believe is illegal. If you go through various UN documents, don't really acknowledge as a legal entity. Does that make any sense?
Yes, thank you, Peter. I apologize. I tried to time my coffee pot to go off over in the song. That's fascinating, Peter. How long have you been advocating for West Papua?
Julian, I've been involved, I suppose, since the early 90s.
Oh, God, goodness me, I called you Peter. So I've been confused with Peter last week. The early 90s, see, I have only been involved for the last 2 to 3 years, and I think I have recollections of when I was perhaps 7 or 8 at a scout or Cubs, one of those Boy Scout meetings, and I'm pretty sure there's people coming around and having slide nights, information nights then, and that was known as the Zirian Jaya, as I recalled it. What, I guess I came to hear of that again through Facebook, as so many of us have, and learnt about the history and some of the legal things and the politics that you've just been describing. And I find the whole, you know, everything West Papua fascinating, to be honest. But look, I'd like to ask everyone we interview on the show, how did you first become involved and how did you first hear of the West Papuan problem, and what perhaps triggers your passion in this cause?
I came across West Papua and Bougainville in the early 90s, conferences and rallies. And it was that a country, our closest neighbour in the case of Australia, there's a media nothing about what's going on over there. There's virtually extrajudicial killings, murder, torture, sterilisation going on every day. And yet, as happened with East Timor, our government seems to put out an order we can legally do to the media network report. So back in those days, we heard much about it. And then slowly, footage got out, such as the Santa Cruz massacre in the case of East Timor, the odd story about West Papua, that the community had an idea of what was going on. And, you know, it's now really just the social media. And, you know, fantastic that you've got this radio program. Well done, congratulations, because this is really educate ourselves and educate other people.
Yeah, thanks, Julian, and thank you, particularly Soleil, for the radio. It's one of Soleil's initiatives, and I agree with you. I remember someone was saying recently about to me in discussions about this that differences between West Papua and East Timor, and East Timor, for people listening at home, East Timor was a formerly a Portuguese colony. West Papua was formerly a Dutch colony. And the differences there, perhaps, I think it was 1907 or something, a resolution in The Hague over a line, I think it was a parallel. If jump in and refresh my memory, if you can recall this. But there were a lot of, after those massacres in East Timor, there were a lot of refugees making it to Australia, and they were able to actually tell their story and get the word out. And people, I think that was one way that it became well known what was happening in East Timor. But fortunately, with West Papua, we don't have refugees making it to Australia. And if they did, as I understand it, they would be sent, as all other refugees would make it to Australia, they'd be sent and processed offshore at Manus or Nauru. Would you like to comment on any of that, Julian?
Yes, so the West Papuan people who have fled West Papua, Australia, have all been allowed as refugees, as political refugees fleeing. They do go, however, from my knowledge, they have all received political asylum in Australia, because the government does, as if they were returned to Papua, they would most likely be murdered.
Wow, okay. So thanks for pointing out. That's not referring to the original 43, as they are known, that this is more recent arrivals, you're saying, Julian?
As far as I know, yes. Center, and he came over here on a student visa for church, and then he overstayed his visa in fear of his life if he returned, and eventually locked up, and then through legal channels got human rights lawyers and putting documentation, and he won asylum. I'll be honest, if anyone claiming asylum was sent back, but I would be very interested from anyone if that is the case. Obviously that needs to be raised, but this is one that the government has. They're trying to appease Indonesia economic. In time, they also recognise that there is a human rights problem over there, and hence the bring all the exact exact numbers, are given political asylum in our country.
Okay, well, that's something we can follow up, Soleil, I think. Would you like to comment at all if you know anything about, this is something that I read about occasionally, pops up on social media, is the amount of money the Australian government spends on training Indonesian military, and supposedly, the as I understand it, it's they are being trained as anti-terrorists, what's the word, soldiers or security forces, but accusations or there is evidence that some of these people that are trained end up in West Papua and may even be involved in some of these human rights abuses we hear about.
Oh, absolutely. Australian governments, consecutive governments, are up to their neck in it. We train a elite police force used for supposedly terrorism, and they're called an 88. Now, they fly over here, they go back, and there's been lots of reports of killings of West Papuans, and not just West Papuans, I would say across the archipelago. It's important to realize that what we see and in West Papua is what is being affected, being oppressed upon all the people, Indonesian archipelago, from Aceh, where they were fighting for many years for independence, all the way across Indonesia, quite a bit on and off, and everywhere you go, people scared to talk about politics, scared of the military. You hear stories of military coming in and just wiping out to support operations, mining activities, oil activities, oil pump activities. It is, however, West Papua and East Timor, I guess, some moderate exposure to occupation by illegal.
Do you hold out much hope for West Papua being able to make it into the Melanesian, the MSG, the spearhead group?
They operate procedures. The MSG has always tried to rule by consensus. And at the moment, as we know, the mighty Barama Fijian ex-military dictator, now in government, won't West Papua. And likewise, the Peter O'Neill government, which came to power through brute force, and also West Papua into the Melanesian family. But both of these governments have very close economic ties with Indonesia, suggested like ties which are preventing those leaders in the right decision. However, the people of those countries are overwhelmingly West Papua independence, just as Australians. It's ironic, isn't it, that we have governments around the world that respect the wishes the people are supposed to represent.
And that's it the world over, isn't it? Politicians, they seem to don't represent the people properly, and they seem to fear the people they represent, and enemies of the state, I think they us citizens are referred to at times. Now, there was something you remarked. I wanted to ask you a question, if you knew. I've always been curious to know what changed, because as far as I understand, back in the so that here in Australia, when Indonesia was seeking independence from the Dutch, the unions here in Australia boycotted the ports at one point and stopped the shipment. Oh, I think it was 1,000 military vehicles that would have helped the Dutch, and in effect, the unions here gave a lot of support to Indonesia's independence. Now, in relation to Australian government, bipartisan, both parties supportive of West Papua's independence too, and letting the Dutch peacefully make a transition period and for West Papuans to take over their own government. And we've actually got the Haitianaku Papua national anthem there that was mentioned before, that was there was a state seal and an anthem and the Morning Star flag chosen in that period. But I wonder if you could comment at all on what do you think was the change in around the 60s there, that the government suddenly did a flip-flop, and is it solely perhaps around that period of time there was the Vietnam War and Kissinger visited Jakarta, and Sukarno was in before Suharto, is that correct? And Kissinger visited Suharto and the invasion of West Papua, and I think went ahead, and I might be confusing my history here. Perhaps could you comment at all on what on the Australian government's sort of both parties bipartisan but flip flop change in support of the idea of West Papua's independence?
That visit was of invasion of East Timor. The President Gerald Ford and Henry Kissinger arrived in Jakarta, stayed for a couple of hours. I think they must have said, righto, go ahead, we give you the green light, and they flew out. And hours later, the Indonesian marched into East Timor. But going back to your question, what do you think caused the policy to force the Dutch to transfer its colony, the UN, and then to Indonesia? We think it's the old story of resources. West New Guinea or West Papua is the world's biggest gold mine. That was discovered back in the 30s, 1936, kept under wraps for decades. And I'm guessing that the United States decided the best way to get access to that gold, the Indonesian dictatorship, rather than through an independent West New Guinea. So I believe they are the mains of the transfer. Coercion was put on the Dutch and coercion united. So that transfer went through, but as we believe, quite illegal, that transfer to Indonesia. And it's worth looking, there's a lot of documents we can't quite go through on this program today, I think. But I will do another, which is Resolution 448 of the United Nations. And this was passed way back on the 12th of December 1950. And states is noting that the independence of the Republic of Indonesia has the admission of state to membership of the United Nations, and therefore the transmission of information on Indonesia to Dutch. So what that's saying is, back in 1950, the United Nations recognized that Indonesia was fully independent, not partially independent, missing some of its territory, but fully independent. And so one of the requirements, having a non-self-governing territory, a colony, effectively, is that you must report once a year, United Nations General Assembly, reporting on what progress you are making towards that territory's independence and the health of the people, the political independence, the environment, and so forth. So the Dutch, the Netherlands, stopped reporting on what is now the Republic of Indonesia. It still had to reporting on West. So Resolution 448 recognised in international law Republic of Indonesia is now independent, fully independent, and West New Guinea, still a colony of the Dutch, waiting. So the intervention of the West on economic grounds, it's much easier, as you can imagine, doing business with a corrupt dictatorship than it is doing business with a legally recognized democratic independent.
Yes, I've read a number of Noam Chomsky books, Julian, and I see Noam states there's it's a repeating pattern with US foreign policy and corporations the world over, this exploitation of other people's resources. We might take a short break and hear the Haitianaku Papua anthem, if that's okay. Julian, would you like to stay with us and keep talking to us after the break? And also, Soleil, do we still have Barbara with us?
Yes, we still have Barbara and Julian.
Okay. And so, Julian, would you like to stay with us after the break? Hello, are you there, Julian?
Yep. Yes, I'm here. What was your name?
Oh, yeah. Glenn, sorry, Julian. We're just going to play the anthem, and just we might talk to you again after the break. We might hear from Barbara again too.
No worries, Glenn.
Thanks so much. Julian, go ahead, Soleil.
Thank you, Glenn, and thank you, Barbara. And I think also too, after the break, we can also hear about what we can do in Australia and in try and help West Papua and Didam by understanding West Papua status. We have the West Papua National Anthem. It's called Haitianaku Papua.
Radio West Papuan Human Rights, we're discussing on our weekly 2-hour show. Julian from Sydney, Soleil, and Barbara Giannata from Italy about all West Papua. So now for the future, and what can we do for West Papua? We ask ourselves questions on some of these social media groups often, and one of the ones that, or some of the ones that come up, what does it take to break oppression and win freedom? Another question that was asked in one of our polls a few months ago was, how do we get past preaching to the converted? So I guess what we're saying here is, how do we move on and create a momentum? If we think back to the 60s, in the early stages in America and here in Australia, I think too, there was fairly wide support for the war in Vietnam. Perhaps it was only a few people on the far left and that were trying to raise voices and protest. And I mentioned Noam Chomsky before. He was one who was quite vocal from the beginning. But it took a long time. In fact, I think the war didn't end until 75, was it? And some people say, depending on which version of history you read, the war was really going from 1954 when the American advisors were in there first. So getting back to the question, the future. So Julian, can you comment on what you know about the sort of activism that has been tried before for West Papua in the past, not only here in Australia, but anywhere in particular? And also, what sort of actions have you heard of that have been used in other similar situations that have either proven successful or could be worth trying here? For people that are listening at home and commenting, we might check the Facebook page in a little while and see if there's any questions. But you can join this conversation by adding questions or commenting or adding your support on our Australia Papua Movement page. Julian, what for the future, what sort of things have been tried and retried in order to raise awareness for what's happening in West Papua?
Well, Glenn, there's groups around Australia now supporting West Papua. They do things like stalls in markets, marches through the city, campaign outside the Indonesian embassy, conferences at universities, school, and say is probably one of the best methods these days. I think another thing that we should do that is probably overlooked, and that is to lobby our local members, even if they're members of the National Party, who are supportive of Indonesia, as has the previous Labor Party too, of course. I think it's important to go and visit, tell him, say, look, you know, we aren't happy what's going on. There's genocide happening in West Papua. And through our support, the Indonesian military, Indonesian police, we ask genocide. And in the prevention and punishment of crimes of genocide, complicity in genocide is one of those crimes. And our government's currently complicit in supporting Indonesian and genocide in West Papua.
Thanks, Julian. We might come to Barbara in just a moment, and I'll put the same question to you, Barbara. But one action I'd like to mention now, I think, in regard to social media, we are launching today on the show. People that have been following the Standing Rock North Dakota pipeline protests will have known or learned about the call for people to check in at Standing Rock and show their support. So wherever you are in the world, you can use your phone to check in. And today we'd like to suggest and put the call out and launch this idea along with our global chant that leading up to the 1st of December, that we use our phones and check in to Jayapura, West Papua. Leave a comment. We'll have some hashtags up later on, and Soleil might like to mention some of those in a moment. This is something that if you're listening at home and you're in Australia and you don't have a lot of time or energy to be putting into social activism, it's easy to get on Facebook and share a post or like a post and invite your friends to have a look at some of the actions that are being planned, especially in the next 2 weeks. The 1st of December is the day that the UK are running another campaign under Benny Wender and are running another global flag-raising day on the 1st of December. So wherever you are in the world, if you've got West Papua flag or can get one, And you can raise it or put it in your window or hang it in your car or put a bumper sticker on. Just put the flag out as a symbol of people seeing it and talking about West Papua. Soleil, could we go to Barbara now? And
sorry,
Barbara. Okay, we've got a caller.
Hello there.
And who are we speaking to?
Let's see. Am I on now?
You're on the air with us. Hello, who's this?
Oh, goodness. this is Andrew Johnson, Sydney.
Good on you, Andrew. Thanks for ringing up and talking on the show. What would you like to say to us?
Look, I'm sorry for not getting in earlier. Up in the club. I hear some of your questions and so forth, and I just wanted to try to clarify one or two. What you're referring to, what was being transferred from the Netherlands to the United Nations and then to Indonesia was only the administration, okay? The power or the government which takes on the administration of governing territory. But legal obligation, responsible welfare of people in the hands of the trustee. And the trustee was until 1982 the Netherlands, and then since 1982 has been the United Nations. The United Nations cannot transfer its trust obligation to anybody yet. That is locked in under the charter. So we've got the situation. Indonesia administrating the territory, legal under the Charter, Chapter 12, the United Nations sponsor anything which happens there. And it is also legally required to promote human welfare and self-governance of, and that's specifically written into Article 76 of the UN Charter.
Thanks. So do you see the solution to this mainly in the hands of the United Nations still, and that a case can be made to the United Nations that Indonesia has failed in its caretaker or custodialship, you feel that's the way to go?
It has a legal responsibility for decolonisation, which it has effectively suspended since 1990, and it's suspended there because Secretary-General still has not told trustee about the trustee that the General Assembly. So the left hand United does not know what the right hand has done.
Right, yes. Okay.
It's the Secretary General, it's his job to make that communication, his job to put relevance on the agenda of each of the organs. Because he's held the news of them that he actually got the General Assembly to make in 1982, because he hasn't put news of that on the agenda of the trustee council, the trustee has not been acknowledged that West Papua is now the legal responsibility of the United Nations, and it also has implied with another requirement it has confirm that status, the International Court of Justice. There's actually a early General Assembly resolution from 1936 that instructed trusteeship council on any legal question that came up in regards to trusteeship be referred to the Internet Court of Justice and firm legal, and obviously Indonesia is going to try to view the issue, so the matter is going to have to, they're going to have to ask the International Court of Justice to confirm. And
thank you so much for calling in and providing this information to us. Now, I mentioned before, some people can ask me what is the difference, and legal subjects are not my specialty, especially international law, but what kind of differences, if you know, can you comment on what's the difference between the situation in East Timor and how they attained their independence, as opposed to the situation here you're describing, where it's still in a trusteeship, custodial state of affairs with Indonesia?
Well, the East Timor case was actually much weaker than Papua, because East Timor was only a non-Muslim territory, and this had been known, and Indonesia had invited in 1975. It was a Portuguese-controlled territory when Indonesia invaded. But then, because our government, the Portuguese, replying silly buggers over the oil, trying to steal the oil from these people, they agreed to go to the Court of Justice, forget anything about that. And the International Court of Justice had the opportunity in 1996 to restate and clarify that Timor was a non-self-governing territory and is therefore entitled to self-determination, and that right of self-determination must not be delayed, etc. So that was another boost whole situation. On top of that, the Norwegians had awarded the Nobel Peace Prize to Horta and Bello in East Timor. That gave Timorese access to get the issue of East Timor into the minds of the time. And because the subject of East Timor and being a non-self-governing territory is now going to be in the mainstream media all the time, there's a lot of pressure. Corporations and money became there in Timor to have its self-determination, to get it out of the hands of Russians and into the hands of East Timorese. Legally, the contracts and so forth weren't really valid for exploiting the oil from Indonesians. So the oil company was running around trying to make deals every potential East Timorese leader they could to make sure as soon as they got their act of self-determination and clarified or wanted independent, that the political leaders would help ConocoPhillips keep the oil. Unfortunately, what's happened. So it's not each circumstance by which territory gain their self-determination the Ottoman. In the case of West Papua, it's not only a non-self-governing territory, it's also a trust territory. And that's a big advantage because as soon as we get that erased at the United Nations itself, by its charter for decolonisation process, supposed to have been doing years.
Thank you, Andrew. I might just we might just pause there. If you stay there with us, if you could, I'd just like to ask Julian if he's still listening there. If I'll come back to you, Andrew, and ask you about how you see what for the future. But I'd just like to ask Julian if he's got anything he'd like to comment on what Andrew's just been discussing.
Thanks. Yeah, Andrew's spot on. It is his problem. They took control of the non-self-governing territory from the Dutch, and they had an obligation to give it self-determination, you know, with haste. East Timor, you might remember the footage in Ali Alatar drinking champagne flying over the Timor Gap somewhere in the late 80s. That was when Australia, the only country in the world to recognise Indonesian sovereignty in East Timor, in exchange for keeping the border up against the East Timorese coast so that Australia got the oil. And as Andrew since came to East Timor, you would think that his government would recognise the old company, Petro Timor, that discovered the oil, invite them to, after all, they were a Portuguese joint venture rather than an operation. Rather than bring back the Portuguese that discovered the oil, they could be ConocoPhillips American company. So that in itself speaks volumes. Indonesia is a self-governing territory, and or West Papua through an illegitimate agreement, or really the nations failing to take its obligations and inform the trusteeship council, as Andrew said. So very, very similar cases, and again, corporations involved in the people's wealth.
Western corporations, I believe, in their contracts, they have a segment devoted to environmental impact. I forget the exact terminology that it's called, but they have to invest something into the local community and a duty of, can you refresh memory of what I'm trying to recall? Are you there, Julian?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Is this in legislation?
I'm thinking it's more in the, I suppose it would be constitution of the corporation involved, that when I'm making an assumption here, but someone told me a while ago that, for instance, the Grasberg and Freeport McMoran company would have, it's not duty of care that I'm trying to recall, but there's a part in the contract where they have to do a certain amount of environmental repair. They're under obligation to provide a certain amount of care for the local community that may be affected by the mining operations. But look, I'll look into that and we'll come back to that. Have we still got Andrew there? And Andrew, for the future, I guess, is the question we're looking at today. How? So we've discussed the possibility of, you know, the United Nations is the way to go, and we've talked about how social media and activism in this respect is one way of raising awareness. So if you actually, well, I think of it, people that are listening in West Papua or at home in Australia or wherever you are tuning in all around the world on this amazing thing called internet radio, there was a statement made by Wimo on last week's show. So if you're sitting at home and you're wondering what it is you can do to help raise awareness for West Papua, or indeed any group that is in your area or that you feel some sort of empathy towards, Wimo stated last week, don't wait for a mandate, do what your heart calls you to do. And I think that's a great piece of advice. The people of West Papua are in large part voiceless. The Western mainstream does not tell their story. If you look on any of the mainstream 7, what it is, Channel 9 and 10 news that we have now, and when they broadcast the weather and they show the weather map at the end of the night, you'll often see Cairns at the temperatures marked there, and you'll see temperatures from all over the world. But just take a look at the PNG map and see if you notice that the western half is blocked out. It's like there's a blackout there. I don't think there's even temperatures are recorded on the news, but it's been a long time since I've watched television, Julian and Andrew, so I may not be correct in that. But let's just remind our listeners there, for the future, for West Papua, the statement from Wimo last week, don't wait for a mandate, do what your heart calls you to do. So if you're listening and you're wondering what you can do in wherever you are, and for a start, you can write to one of your local politicians. If you can, I'd advise that you do it with a real letter rather than email, as they're not obliged to respond or act upon an email. Now, in regard to, I've temporarily forgotten what I was about to say. Barb in Italy, would you like to comment on anything you've been listening to here from an Andrew? And what are your thoughts on things for the future, how we can go about raising awareness for West Papua?
I think I agree with the fact that we have to get involved our local politicians. And also, we must convince to boycott, to not to buy any more that product. But they realized the fact that the war doesn't. So if we touch them and don't buy product, they will realize, you know, there's something that the people know, cannot stand it, because it's, when you buy certain, it's like to buy blood. So I think we have direction to boycott, to not to buy.
Yeah, you mentioned boycott. Of course, some people would suggest that a boycott of Indonesian products could hurt people within Indonesia that are quite innocent to all of this and maybe not actually what we're trying to do. But I take your point, Barbara. I've read and heard the call for a boycott of products several times, and I've wondered whether that would be an option. But in regard to products, the palm oil industry is one that was very successful. The anti-palm oil and the orangutan, Save the Orangutan campaign, they, at least for a period of time, seem to have great success in raising awareness of the destruction of the rainforests in parts of Indonesia, either through burning and fires that became out of control, but land clearing in order to plant palm oil. So as far as I know, there's still quite a big campaign on to boycott products that contain palm oil or only use products that contain palm oil from sources that can be verified as sustainable. Would you, Billion or Andrew, perhaps Andrew, have you got any thoughts on the effectiveness of things like the kind of things that Barbara just mentioned, like with regard to boycotting certain products?
You there?
Yep. Go ahead, right. Andrew.
Boycotting campaigns and the like are raising public awareness and for, well, mostly raising public awareness stage. Indonesia would commonly reason diverse. We wouldn't exactly cripple bet it more for more people involved in something that they can get involved with. And that's quite important in the advocacy community for people to have something that they feel they can contribute to the struggle. It's a very good idea point. And when you undertake a campaign like that, unexpected doors can open down as you're raising that public awareness and you get called in to talk about things about why there's a campaign going on and so forth. It's hard to be what doors might open in the path. But it's certainly better to be doing something than nothing. There's two other things I'd like to mention. One, our community, the world, could also campaign and try to get to the mainstream, the news and the information that there are requests have gone in the United Nations, that it's just recently, earlier this year, at the permanent forum, Mr. John Ainery, resolved the case of Res Papua in the council that forum with courts, economic and social, should put the issue of Res Papua on the trustee agenda. But because there wasn't a public awareness, there weren't journalists ask experts what they were doing, the experts had quietly ignored the Res Papua request, and they haven't even mentioned anything about Res Papua to the economic and social. So public awareness and pain, we can harness to ask questions at the United Nations, that would be very powerful.
Thank you, Andrew. Julian, what are your thoughts on, I know I've heard mixed opinions and thoughts on in regards to boycott. I guess it makes sense in some ways in people's minds that if you hit somebody where their wallet is, so to speak, that they'll pay attention. What are your thoughts on boycotts and products?
I think it's a great idea, Glenn. Is excellent. Bear in mind the products we get from Indonesia, such as timber, which is coming out of their beautiful rainforests, palm oil. These big usually operated with the support of the Indonesian military, as well as providing security. They wipe out the necessary if they complain, if they protest. So when you talk about boycotting, you're not hurting small village person that's going about their day-to-day activities in a village growing their fruit and vegetables. And most of these corporations in the oil palms are from Malaysia and overseas, with military involvement. And I think we need to start looking at these very issues, not just to Indonesia, but to any country that does not have good human rights and good environmental. They talk about this level playing field, no tariffs, free trade agreements, but it's absolutely crap. It's not a level playing field. Country is manufacturing goods, there's no human rights, speech, there's political prisoners, there's no environmental laws, and the other country manufacturing the same goods obviously costs a lot more to manufacture, but they go bankrupt because the country with the human rights and the environmental desecration can undermine the economy. So putting on tariffs on countries, including Indonesia, would be a great idea.
You made some excellent points there, Julian. Thank you. You're listening to Blog Radio, and we're talking about raising awareness for West Papua. You can join the conversation on our Facebook page of Free West Papua Movement Australia or Free West Papua Movement Victoria. Soleil, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Have you got another song? Yes, I can. Have you got another piece of music? In fact, could we play the dance again? I'll just announce again. We are organising a couple of actions here coming up to the December 1st Global Flag Raising Day, Independence Day for Papua. And one of them is a global chant. We're trying to get people to record themselves sing or get a group together, record it on your mobile phone. It's only three lines you have to record. Send it in to freewestpapuavictoria@gmail.com. And your voice or your voices or friends group will get together, we'll be met together, and we'll create a global chant. You can hear the chant online on our Facebook page. There's 22 minutes remaining on the show. I think we should move, perhaps we'll hear the chant again. and then we'll talk to Soleil about the Kalunga Foundation. Thank you so much, Julian and Andrew, for joining us on the show today, your comments, and thank you so much all the way from Italy, Barbara. I shall check out your Facebook page later. I've shared a link to Barbara's page, the Free Papua Movement page in Italy. It's shared on the comments in relating to this blog radio show, raising the issue of West Papua. You can find that on our Facebook page, Free Papua Movement Australia. Thank you both, Julian, Andrew, for joining us, and Barbara, thank you so much. Coming up soon on one of the next shows, we'll be hearing from one of the West Papua Warriors, a rugby team that's helping raise awareness for West Papua by playing rugby, and they've had some wins, I believe, recently. I'm not a sporting person, but I certainly support the West Papua Warriors. We have made contact with some people that are at Standing Rock right now in the and have been there for about a week, and we'd like to try and hear from them at some point soon on an interview with them, hear what they have to say about their activism and what's happening on the North Dakota pipeline. And in this way, I think if we can connect, make as many connections as possible via social media for people who are activists or advocates for West Papua and the West Papuan people themselves, be able to connect with other Indigenous groups, especially those that are facing mining corporations and the damages that to the environment and the list goes on, the healthcare, the denial of healthcare. We talked on the show last week about the orphans of the genocide in West Papua in the capital town of Jayapura, how there's rampant uncontrolled blue sniffing going on. It's such an horrific story. We've talked about the last week on the show, we talked about the AIDS, unfortunately, for people in West Papua, many of them Indigenous Papuans who contract the HIV virus. It appears that they're not being treated or providing any kind of care and are being left to suffer and die. And decided that this is the focus in the next 2 weeks leading up to December 1st, that trying to make actions that would raise awareness. The other initiative we're taking the lead from Standing Rock, and we're organising and launching a global check-in. So in the next couple of weeks, you could grab your mobile phone and go to the location button. If you're on an iPhone like me, you can go to your Facebook page, location, little balloon at the, I think it's in the middle. My phone is temporarily not working. Be right. And you can tap on that little bubble and you can type in Jayapura, and you'll be able to check in there. We will be providing some hashtags that you can post along with your check-in, and feel free, take the lead from Wimo. Don't wait for a mandate, do what your heart calls you to do. So if you've got a comment you'd like to make along with your check-in at Jayapura, start thinking about it now, and over the next couple of weeks, get you and your friends, please join us, and we're attempting a global check-in. Goodness me, the time is flying by, Soleil. Can we hear this chant again, and we'll get to you and hear all about the Kalunga Foundation. Thank you all.
If we all toe the line, maybe we'll see another day. If we all bow a line, maybe we'll live another day.
Hi, you're listening to Raising the Issue of West Papua, Session 2. And joining us next on the show, we have Soleil all the way from Sydney, and give you a quick intro. The Kulunga is the name of a tribe in the highlands of West Papua who were massacred by the Indonesian military. Out of the ground where they bled, grew a tree. The elders named the tree Kulunga. This foundation pays tribute to their memory and sacrifice. Why do we need to help? Why do we need a foundation? Tens of thousands of West Papuan refugees fled Indonesian rule, who have fled Indonesian rule, live in border camps in Guinea. While the United Nations and the PNG government recognize those people living in East Arwen as refugees, they do not recognize the thousands that live in border camps. Therefore, they have no access to medical or government. So despite the many practical problems the refugees face on a daily basis, the main issue for them is not material, but recognition of their rights and aspirations to freedom of movement, granting of identity papers and travel documents, access to jobs and education, and the gaining of residency in PNG, presently denied, despite many having been in the camps for over 10 years. This violates Articles 26, 27 and 28 of the UN Convention relating to the status of homelessness. The Kulunga Foundation was put together with this in mind, and we aim to bring some form of hope to a people forgotten and neglected by the world. Now that sums it up beautifully there, Soleil. It's the forgotten. There's a documentary I've watched several times. I think it's called The Forgotten Bird of Paradise. Beautiful story. So, Soleil, welcome again. So good to be doing this with you. Thank you so much for organizing this. Session two, what can you tell us about your work with Kulunga?
Thank you, Glenn. I see that we only have 7 minutes left, so I'm just going to quickly talk about this. So basically, the foundation, we're currently collecting donations from all over Australia to send over in a container. Our contacts are the West Papua Refugee and the West Papua Refugee Resettlement that has been set up by the Governor of Port Moresby Papua. First of all, we would like to be Governor helping them with land that some families be able to. And so basically we're collecting donations in Australia, and people have been donated clothes for little children as well, in blankets, towels, toys, even up to baby equipment like prams and stuff like that. I would just like to thank people that have so far and have so much, the people that have donated in kind, have the money through our GoFundMe to help in some of the things that we're actually asking of to donate that are needed in relocated refugees are tent and water, 5 gallon water, and also plastic.
Okay, so it's not just money that people can donate: mosquito nets and 5 gallon containers of water. Now, I've just posted a link to Kulunga Foundation in the comments on our conversation. And if you'd like to join the conversation discussing raising awareness for West Papua, you can find the Facebook page Free West Papua Movement, Free Papua Movement Australia, sorry, and you'll Kulunga Foundation, the Italian campaign, just posted there in the comments. It's amazing work. How many people are involved in the Kulunga Foundation, and how did this get started? This is only something that's been formed in, if I'm correct, just recently in the last few months?
That's right. It formed recently and currently have committee members and a lot of them right across Australia. Some of them have been signing because they're being, they have other things going on, but they're very much volunteer their time to collect their planning.
So there you have it. There's a dedicated small band, grassroots group, together and raising money and practical aid for people who are refugees from West Papua who are now living in refugee camps in PNG over the border. Terrible situation, Soleil. What are we up to with how are we going for time? The time's just got away. I thought when we started this show, I thought 2 hours and a couple of the people have called in and couldn't make it to be interviewed. How are we going to fill this in? But we've had a great interview with Julian, and Andrew rang in, and we heard from Barbara Gianazzo forgive me if I haven't pronounced your name correctly, Barbara, all the way from me. We're discussing raising the issue of West Papua and how we can help the people of West Papua. At the moment, the Australia West Papua movement is focusing on the HIV and AIDS, I suppose you could call it an epidemic, when they're testing people Can you recall the figures? Was it 100 people and 30 tested positive for HIV, Soleil?
30 were tested, and there were the span of 3 years, I think 2007 to 2008, more than 3,000 died.
That's me, and who knows how many people are dying of these diseases and other diseases and not getting treatment. It's a shocking situation. So if you're listening to this show either live now or at some point in the future, you'll be able to listen to this as a podcast at any time. Please share this around. Something I mentioned before about writing to politicians. When you write to a politician, you get to put a real letter in the mail, not an email. Emails aren't obliged to be responded to by politicians and officials. But if you can put a real email together, you might also like to ask your local politician to join or consider joining the International Parliamentarians for West Papua. It's IPWP, and it's a growing number of people from all over the world that are joining that. That's something else you can do. How are we going now? We're up for 10 minutes. We've got another piece of mix still to play to finish the show. What are we going to finish the show with?
I'm going to play a song by bandman Lucky Eyed Guy. He's a singer from South Africa, and they've actually recorded a song called Free West Papua, and it's actually featuring also a voice, Benny Wenders, in his language, to stand up for. So I'm going to play that at the end of our show. I just would like also, Glenn, to invite everyone in New South Wales to come to our march. It's organized for the 4th of December, that is a Sunday. Now, obviously, the 1st of December, which is the date of the Independence Day of West Papua, on a Thursday, and most of me are not available to attend on a Thursday, so we'll do a Sunday where everybody can attend. And meeting in the grounds of Opera House, and we'll be walking from the Opera House. We'll start at 1 p.m. Yes, I'm inviting you to come along and walk with us to raise the money for West Papua, stand in solidarity in time, raise the money for that. We'll be marching right through the middle of, right down to Newtown Hall. And yeah, so that's basically what's happening. There's also another flag raising event for NOAA Lisbon. It's at the King George Square and it's on Thursday.
That's great. Thank you very much for that. I'll come back to for Columba Foundation in a minute. I'm just trying to find, as we speak, I'm trying to find the poster for, we have a film night here locally. I'll just give another plug for in Castlemaine at the Casper Gallery. That's spelled C-A-S-P-A. And that's on Sunday the 27th. The film we're screening is Punks for West Papua. By all accounts, I haven't seen it yet. By all accounts, it's a fascinating documentary. There will be food provided by the West Papuan community, and there will be a bar open. Drink and watch the movie. Hear speakers come up from Melbourne and talk about West Papua. So it's at the Casper Gallery in Castlemaine. It's $10 and 27th of November, which is a Sunday, at 7 p.m. Soleil, you've got a Younger Foundation. You've got a GoFundMe program going, asking people to donate. How much are you hoping to raise? Is there a fixed amount, or is it an ongoing donation call for donations that people can donate money to?
Yeah, so basically, we're trying to raise over 5,000 Australian, and that is to pay the cent of so I believe that's what we're trying to call the money that we can save to actually.
Yeah, well, now I was just thinking exactly that. Christmas is coming up. If you want to do something for someone, you know, we in Australia are so lucky. We really don't realise how lucky we are when most of our problems aren't to do with life or death, you know, more about a particular discomfort we may be feeling about something. We like to have a whinge about things, but really the people of West Papua have suffered for 55 years under an Indonesian, a brutal military. Successive governments have not helped. Australian government, the United Nations, governments all over the world that support their corporations going into West Papua, taking the wealth out of their country. And can I just point out here that a fact that West Papua is one of the most, is the greatest contributor of economic benefit to the Indonesian economy, yet the people who live there, the indigenous Papuans, are some of the most poorest and hardest done by. It's just, you know, just so unfair. So if you would like to give some money, and really to a wonderful cause and a wonderful bunch of people who are just doing this as a grassroots movement, trying to raise money for refugees in PNG that have crossed the border from West Papua, there's a GoFundMe program trying to raise money to send a container of goods over to help the refugees. Now we're approaching 12:20 Soleil, thinking it might be almost time to say goodbye.
Yes, definitely say goodbye. We definitely only have like 4 minutes to go.
All right. Well, I'd like to thank Soleil very much for organising this. Thank you very much to all the guests, Barbara, Emily, and Jim William here in Sydney, and we're calling up and look forward to speaking to some more people on our next show. Thank you very much, everybody, from Free West Papua. See you again soon.
Thank you so much, Glenn. I'm sorry, couldn't really hear there. I would like to thank everybody. I would also like to this next West Papua by the band. The band members of Lucky Unfort Away, featuring the voice of Danny Wender, the West Papua currently in exile, the United Kingdom. And thank you so much to Barbara and Andrew. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Blood of West Papua already paid the fee. For freedom you must march on the street. For freedom must come today. You were born free like a bird on the sea. Blood of West Papua already paid the fee. For freedom you must march on the street. Freedom must come today. You were born free like a bird on the sea. Blood of
you were born free like Colorado, West Papua.